This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Pardons, presidential pardons, much in the news. I welcome Andrew McCarthy of the National Review Online and Thaddeus McCutter of American Greatness to comment on what we know so far about the power of the presidential pardon, and in specific, who was pardoned and why. Andy, a very good evening to you, and I read from a paragraph you posted some days past. In its 1915 decision in Burdick versus United States, the Supreme Court ruled that a pardon must be accepted in order to have legal effect because of the, quote, confession of guilt implied in the acceptance of a pardon, end quote. The court elaborated that in terms of public shame, a pardon can involve, quote, consequences of even greater significance than those from which it purports to relieve, end quote. If I understand, then everyone who accepted the pardon offered, especially those who were pardoned without an offense named or a grand jury convened or charges made, are admitting to guilt? Is that how to interpret the Supreme Court? Good evening to you, Andy.
Good evening, John and Thaddeus. Well, that is how you would interpret it under the Burdick decision from 1915. Now, there's been a lot of pushback on that in the ensuing century. And I think a lot of this is well taken, especially unlike 1915, we're now in an age of politicized prosecution where an innocent person could reasonably say, I would be delighted to take a pardon, even though I haven't done anything wrong, in order to spare me at least some of the, expense and ignominy of being under a criminal investigation and criminal charges. And that is the way that the Biden people tried to spin the pardons that he issued, that President Biden issued to, public officials and members of Biden's own family. Their story, and it's the one they're sticking to, is that they didn't do anything wrong. But they're so worried that Trump will weaponize the justice system. It's particularly rich having Biden make that point, since he spent 4 years weaponizing the justice system. But that they're so concerned about Trump that they simply had to do this. Not that anyone is actually guilty of anything. They're just worried about abuses of power. But as you read from it, John, in the Supreme Court's opinion, they make the common sense observation, which I think most people probably adhere to, that if you're accepting a pardon, it has to be because you did something that warrants being pardoned.
Dennis, you have a question.
So, Andy, let's say Mr. Biden issues a pardon to John Batchelor. Does John Batchelor have to accept that pardon? And what happens if he doesn't?
John would not have to accept the pardon. And if he didn't accept it, it would not be a completed pardon, because the thing that the Burdick, regardless of what you think of the Burdick court's reasoning for this resolution, the bottom line of the decision is that there is no pardon unless there is an acceptance of the pardon. So he would have to accept it for it to be formally effective.
I'm keen on the Nixon pardon of 1974 because it was the first time I ever heard of the idea of a presidential pardon. I had not done my homework, but I was a younger person and wasting my life reading comic books and things like that. So when Nixon got pardoned, it was politically damaging to Gerald Ford. And afterwards, it was presented as a brave thing for him to do, but His presentation at the time, the president's presentation was, this will relieve the country of a burden that it's been living with, and Mr. Nixon can live out his life. That was the precedent that was often cited in these last days since Mr. Biden pardoned General Milley, retired, Congresswoman Cheney, retired, and Dr. Anthony Fauci, retired. That it relieves them of the burden of prosecution. Puzzling, though, putting Fauci, Cheney, and Milley in the same basket with Richard Nixon. Does that make sense, Andy, that because we did it for Nixon, we can do it for any public servant?
Well, first of all, Nixon was no longer a public servant. He was out of office when Ford decided to pardon him. I guess you could say the same thing for Cheney and some of the other people who Cheney was defeated when she last sought her congressional seat. I think, John, that if I could separate out two different considerations, Ford's pardon of Nixon, I think, was in the spirit of what Alexander Hamilton in the Federalist Papers suggested that the pardon was for. The idea of having the pardon power in the Constitution was, as Hamilton said at the time, there'll be times when the spirit of insurrection or deep divide in the country will well up, and it's worth having the president able to make an extension of clemency in those moments because it'll be good for national healing and national unity. And the pardon of Nixon, obviously there wasn't an insurrection going on in the country, but there was a constitutional crisis and a further proceedings against Nixon after the resignation, which left the country in a pretty fraught state at that time, would not have been good for the country. It would have been deeply divisive. So I think the reason Ford's pardon is remembered fondly, even though, as you just pointed out, it was very unpopular at the time it was issued, is because it did have the effect that Hamilton talked about, this sort of national healing. I don't think you can say that about the prospective pardons or the preemptive pardons that are issued to the government officials. Just 4 years ago, the same Democrats, Biden included, were speculating that Trump might issue preemptive pardons to people after the Capitol riot on January 6th of 2021. And they were horrified by the idea. And Biden came out and said, that is not the way we're going to do pardons in the Biden administration. Here we are, fast forward 4 years later. Turns out Trump didn't do preemptive pardons, but Biden has disgraced himself with them.
That is, we have a question.
Well, Andy, isn't it actually true as a practical matter that this is not about healing the country? What Joe Biden has done is he's laid a precedent by which future administrations can tell their lackeys to weaponize the government and don't worry about it. I'm going to give you preemptive pardons on the way out the door. This is very dangerous.
I agree with that. I think it's actually it virtually defies the one premise we could always state about pardons, which is that they had to be prospective rather than retrospective. In other words, retrospective rather than prospective. That is, a president can't give somebody a get out of jail free card. You can't pardon somebody for things that haven't been done yet. But now you virtually can, because if what Biden has done here becomes normalized, that's exactly what Thaddeus just described, is exactly what can happen. The president can basically direct his subordinates to commit illegal and abusive activity and assure them that at the end they'll be pardoned. So even though the pardon won't happen until the end, they're basically getting exactly the get out of jail free card that they're not supposed to get.
Staying with these three, it's a long list. Thousands, I think, are involved here. But these three, Cheney, Milley, and Fauci. The technical details fascinate me. When the president signs that document, and we were told that it was signed somewhere in the last half hour, maybe you indicated 20 minutes, I heard 15, but, you know, it's just gossip. The president was on his way to the inaugural address. He sat up front. We saw him. So he had to sign it at some point in those 20 minutes. The Supreme Court says it must be accepted. Does that mean that Cheney, Fauci, and Milley were on the phone acknowledging they accept the pardon? There was an attorney sitting by. There was some judge passing judgment. Yes, they've accepted it.
Well, let's sort out the timeline, John, because those three pardons, the preemptive pardons for the public officials, Those were announced early in the morning, hours before the inauguration. I believe it was by 8, 9 o'clock in the morning. So that wouldn't have been an issue. The ones that came 20 minutes or so before the end of Biden's term were the pardons to his three siblings and their three spouses.
I see.
Those were the ones that were announced at the very end. And since those were all Biden's, I would think that they would have easily been able to coordinate whatever communication needed to be done, even if it was only in minutes, to make sure that the pardons would be accepted. But I don't think there was any doubt that those pardons would be accepted.
So the general, the doctor, and the former congresswoman had all acknowledged acceptance earlier in the morning.
Yes. In fact, the first I learned of it, I believe, was reading in the New York Times early that morning that Dr. Fauci and General Milley had already accepted the pardons. And then Liz Cheney, I think, put a statement out later.
Thaddeus, you have a question.
Yes, Andy. Off the air, we had talked about there are some potential death penalty implications regarding the pardons. Would you care to talk about that?
Yeah. So one of the rounds of we commonly call it, as a catch-all, the pardon power, but included within it, these are basically clemency grants by the president. So included or subset within the pardon power is the commutation power, where you can leave the conviction in effect on the public record for all the collateral consequences of a conviction, but reduce the sentence. And that what presidents do probably more often than they actually issue a full pardon, which forgives the crime. And as a matter of law, it's like the crime never occurred, at least with respect to the person who's pardoned. You can commute sentences. And I think presidents do that. Biden did it when John mentioned a couple of moments ago that it was thousands of these clemency grants. Most of them were commutations, prisoners whose sentences were reduced. And the Biden pardons included, there were 40 people on death row, some of them waiting for about 20 years to have their sentences executed. When Biden on last week pardoned 37 of the 40 on the idea that the death penalty is unconstitutional, or at least raises serious questions. They can't really argue that it's unconstitutional because it's in the Constitution, and the Supreme Court has upheld the death penalty on the very grounds that Biden was citing, which is that the chemical concoction that they use to administer it could cause pain. The Supreme Court's rejected that argument. Biden relied on it in the pardons. But I think, interestingly, it was only 37, not all 40, which kind of makes you ask the question, well, you know, it's either inhumane or it's not. How can you distinguish three cases? And the three cases they distinguished turned out to be the three capital cases brought by the Obama and Biden administrations, the Obama administration bringing them and the Biden administration defending them in court. For example, the Boston Marathon bomber Dzhokhar Tsarnaev was not given a commutation, so he's still on death row.
I'm speaking with Andrew McCarthy of the National Review Online and Thaddeus McCotter of American Greatness. We're talking about the pardon power of the president of the United States in office. And when we come back, not 50 years ago now, but almost, a very, very, very unhappy thing happened. The murder of two FBI agents by a man named Peltier, who's now 80 years old and has been pardoned by the president of the United States.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.